Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show. Well, that damn eye, man, I tell you. I would definitely be worried about this eye were it not for the fact when I look at it close up, you know.
Yeah, either you got to fix it or you don't.
Yeah, man, you can't keep looking at it. Well, look, I'm just looking, you know, is it worth a trip to the freaking doctor? That's all. It's getting better, I think. But it sure looks freaking weird, man, staring at the camera. Anyway, what happened was, if you guys don't know the story, I woke up Sunday morning and the blood vessels in one of my eyes had just, like, gone haywire. I mean, it was literally just bang, had a hemorrhage of some kind. And it had been a tough Saturday night, so I'm just guessing that there was something having to do with stress. It's happened before to me at times in my life, and so that's why I thought what happened. We'll see. I don't know. You know, like I said, it could be a brain tumor.
Quit talking that way, man. You don't know what the brain tumor.
I'm kidding around, okay? It's not a brain tumor. All right. The story that we're talking about, and by the way, welcome to the show. It is our News and Information Hour. Phil Hendry here with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Robert, the nephew of Mavis Leonard, who's been on our show from time to time, and I understand she's going to be calling in tonight.
Yeah, my aunt wants to call in tonight and comment on a whole... She hasn't called a talk show in a while, so we'll talk on you soon.
Your aunt hasn't called a talk show. Now, who does she usually call?
Didn't she call, like, Art Bell?
Well, she used to talk to Art Bell, but... Now nah, Bill ain't there. She called up. I think she talked to
George Norrie.
Yeah, I thought talked to him. And she come on. She talked to you too.
All right, good. Well, we'll look forward to hearing from your aunt Mavis. Mavis Leonard is the well known lady on our show because she is the one. She's got all those spirituals, right?
Yeah, she's thinking about putting them in a songbook. You know,
she ought to sell a CD of her or something like that. That's my idea.
Man, she can't sing. But I think the ones she wrote.
Well, the ones that she wrote, I mean, didn't she write one about being baptized in the Christian faith?
Yeah, it's called Baptist Baby in a Bag.
Baptist Baby in a Bag. That I don't know if that's going to go over with the faithful, you know?
It's a very good spiritual on account of you put a baby in a bag.
Yeah, that's how you do it. You got to bag it.
You always bag the baby.
What do you mean you always bag the baby? She's singing a song about how to baptize a baby on the river. You stick the baby in a bag and float him down the river.
Yeah.
Well, everybody knows putting a baby in a plastic bag is going to kill him.
Why?
Why? Because he can't breathe, bud. That's why.
Well, no, you poke two holes in it.
Oh, well, you poke two holes in it. Well, of course. Brother. And then what was the other one?
Wire brush, right?
Yeah, scrub a baby down with a wire brush.
Scrub a baby down with an old wire brush. Yeah, that was that one. I don't know, man. I just don't know. All right. She going to sing some of those?
Yeah, she might, right?
I don't know, man. If you can get her to sing, you're going to have to come up. Because what happened if you sing and somebody record it, then they're going to have to get the royalty payment on that. She'll probably want to, you know, get a taste.
Oh, she'll want to get a taste, huh? Well, in that case, I ain't going to have her sing, okay?
Why are you going to be cheap?
We don't have a budget to pay people. Don't you guys know that yet? All right, anyway, a pastel version of The Scream by Edward Munch fetched nearly $120 million. This is what we were talking about during the portions of the show tonight. It fetched $120 million from... Who bought it?
Oh.
An anonymous buyer.
The guy didn't want to say, huh?
Nope. Didn't want anybody to know. An anonymous buyer. Maybe it was Bernie Madoff's wife or something. Somebody really outrageous. Maybe it was Madoff. Anyway, $120 million from an anonymous buyer Wednesday at Sotheby's in New York, setting a new world record for a work of art sold at auction. $120 million. Now, I don't know if that is a world record in terms of art pieces sold.
What's the difference?
Well, this was sold at an auction. There could have been a private transaction that took place between buyer and seller in the history of art pieces being sold that we don't know about or that we do know about and that was went for more. You know, not all art is sold at an auction. Experts had expected the masterpiece to break new ground as the famed New York auction house, at the famed New York auction house, Sotheby's. Its pre-sale estimate... The pre-sale estimate was $80 million. It was the highest ever listed at Sotheby's, and it blew right through that baby. The actual sale price was $119 million.
You said $119.
Shut up. $119 million. Okay. $119,922,500. Man.
Now, how the hell are you asking like that?
Yeah, that little guy says, what am I bid for a piece of the art? $5. Who will bid $5?
They ain't going to bid $5 on that, man. It probably started like $1 million.
No, they didn't. They started at $80 million. They started at $80 million. That was what the pre-sale estimate. Then I got started lower. They figure it's worth at least $80 million. So that's where they started it. Now, I don't know what the increments are. It looks like thousands of dollars. Is it 10,000? What are the increments, you know?
No, the way the guy does it, start at $80 million. Do I hear $80 million and $5? Do I hear $80 million and $5?
Bud, are you an idiot or something?
They ain't going to say $80 million and $5, man. They're going to go way more than that.
Why?
It's going to take them forever to get to $120 million if they're taking $5 bids. $80 million. Do I hear $80 million and $10? You a nut or something? These people are wealthy that are at these things, man. They're loaded. Oh, baby. This is a drop in the bucket for some of these cats. So they ain't going $5 bids. I mean, if you look at this, it must have been like an, I don't know what it was, 10,000?
Well, maybe they start out an odd number.
$119,922,500. Maybe it's 1,000, you know. God, that seems kind of El Cheapo Reno. Anyway, previously the most expensive artwork ever sold there at Sotheby's, okay, was Pablo Picasso's painting Nude Green Leaves and Bust. That's kind of like California or Bust.
Yeah.
Nude Green Leaves and Bust, which brought in $106.5 million 2 years ago. Wow, man, and this is $119 million. The previous record for a Munch work of art was just over $38 million. Edward Munch. Now, that'll be a guy you can look up, bud, on if you want Wikipedia, if you want to actually learn something about the guy, maybe Encyclopedia Britannica or something else.
What would you recommend?
How about one of the art museums or something? Maybe go to one of their sites.
You got all wrong about Wikipedia, man. All they do is copy stuff like that. The Wikipedia, they copy stuff from an art museum.
Yeah, sometimes Winklepedia copies it from an art museum, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they have jackballs in there screwing us. I don't know, man. I'm just, you know. The version of the Scream on the block Wednesday was one of four, two pastels and two paintings executed between 1893 and 1910, Sotheby said, and is one of the best-known images in modern art. You guys know the Scream? Well, here on Phil TV and HD, there. It's a guy standing on a road, and he's screaming. Now, this is a black and white that you're seeing here that I'm showing in the camera, but if you see the actual painting, it's in color. The figure of the man you see in its entirety, and it's quite a shocking and a very stark piece.
Why you say that?
Because it's this lone figure, and I believe the sun is setting or rising. And I believe that when you look at this thing, there's this sense of just complete and isolation. This guy is in the middle of what is otherwise probably a fairly calm scene. It's a country road. There's a split rail fence that's next to him. There's even another figure, I think, in the picture. But this guy is completely alienated to the point where he's holding the side of his head and he's screaming. And it probably was one of those pictures that just took people by surprise. You know, it's kind of like Jimmy Cagney, you know, squeezing that grapefruit into that woman's face, which I know you guys don't know what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
James Cagney, in one of his movies, took a grapefruit and pushed it into the actress's face. It's a very iconic scene. It shocked audiences at the time. The first time I saw it, I thought it was, wow, that's Jimmy Cagney just pushed a grapefruit into that lady's face.
Who's Jimmy Cagney?
He was a great actor in the early part of movies. All right. Let's see. So anyway, so Edward Munch, which Bud laughs at that name.
That's pretty funny to think about it. What if his middle name is Butt?
I was thinking about it. His name was Edward Butt.
You shut up and grow up. What if his middle name's Butt? The version of the Scream on the block Wednesday was one of four between 1893 and 1910 and is one of the best known images in modern art. It's also the only version a private collector can get their hands on at a public auction. The other three are housed in National Gallery of Norway and at the Munch Museum in the Norwegian capital. Oh, so this guy's a...
He's Norwegian.
Yeah.
Norwegian?
Or whatever that is.
Well, remember the time the guy came on and said, if you're part African and part Norwegian?
Oh, that was a low... Are you guys out of your minds? Anyway, that's in Oslo, Norwegian. That's in Oslo, and I guess Mr. Munch is a Norwegian. I mean, he's Norwegian. And that's kind of heavy. So there are three other versions of the Scream. Heavy. Munch also created a lithograph of the Scream in 1895, the same year he executed the pastel, auctioned on Wednesday. Munch's use of color, art historians say, is a distinguishing characteristic of this version. The pastel on board also remains in its original frame. So it's a painting that has not been moved into a new frame. It has that much going for it in terms of its if its historical import. Dubbed the Portrait of a Soul and the face that launched a thousand therapists, the Scream depicts a distorted human figure, hands flat against its sunken face, eyes and mouth wide open in the foreground of a nightmarish landscape. I never thought it was nightmarish, but... The pastel is being sold by Norwegian businessman Peter Olsen, whose father is thought to have been a friend and patron of the famed artist. All right, we'll be back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. I got to take a break here and talk more about the Scream and Norwegians, you know, all that stuff. World-famous Phil Hendry show, our news and information hour, and Mavis Leonard is coming up, too, Robert's aunt. Maybe she'll talk to us about the Scream.
Yeah, I'll talk about Norwegian, too.
All right.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
So if you joined us on Phil TV in HD, I just showed online here a picture. This is the actual scene of the auction itself. And this is an article written by Jenna Bunch. Not Jenna Munch and not Jenna Bush. Jenna Bunch.
She related?
Is she related to who?
She related to the guy named Munch.
I maybe not, since her last name is Bunch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it.
I don't give a damn if it sounds... Bud Dickman sounds like something that I don't... Never mind. So,
Don't say it.
I didn't say it. So, anyway, that's the picture of it there, and that is the scene. And what kills me about this picture, and, of course, there's an article you can read up if you want, but this particular scene is a scene from Sotheby's where this The Scream was auctioned. A painting... Remember, folks, this is a painting that is 117 years old, 1895. So it's old, and but it comes from a period when art, I guess, international art was beginning to sort of explode into like weird, surreal stuff. All these cats with their cell phones. You see that?
Yeah, I was gonna say that, man. They're probably on a phone with a guy.
Yeah, I bet you the guy that bought it is like a Mr. like a Dr. X or something, and he didn't want anybody to know about it.
Well, no kidding. That's what he said. He didn't want anybody to know about it. But all these guys on their cell phones are all like, they represent buyers. And so there's a dude there just, the bid right now, they're like, what do you want me to do, Mr. X?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
God, the money, man. You can't even imagine it. You can't, I can't. The money that these people have got. And,
What think all these people made their money?
You don't know. I mean, some of them are probably... made their money in whatever the family business was. You know, if you think of the Astors, if you think of the real old American money, Astors, Vanderbilts, that money started out, the Astor money started out as fur. He was a fur trader. Then he bought real estate. And the Vanderbilts is something else. You don't know. And then there's...
What about Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson's money, well, his money did come from movies. Now it just simply is going to his ex-wife. And anyway,
oh man, I hope Mel Gibson not hear that.
But, you know, I mean, do I lie or what? 877-876 Phil is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Mavis Leonard is joining us from Southgate tonight, Robert's aunt. And Mavis, nice to talk with you, dear. We haven't talked to you in a long time.
I'm really glad to be on with you, Phil, and I'm very, very grateful that you have a place there for my my nephew, Robert, he, a good man, a good man.
Thank you, honey.
And I know that I said things about you laying around, Robert. I think you're a good man.
Thank you, honey. I love you.
I love you, too. You know, you are the son of my sister. My sister died.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know, she's sorry to hear that. How long do you think she's going to live? I mean, I'm 87, and she was 93 when she died. So you can say you're sorry to hear. I'm sure you are sorry to hear it, but I thank God she died because...
Why do you say that?
Am I being interviewed by Mr. Henry? Am I talking to you?
Mother, what are you talking about? My mother...
Am I being interviewed by Mr. Henry or you?
Okay, that's fine. But why are you? Why did you say you were happy she died?
Oh my God, how long you want a woman to live? How long you want a woman to live? She gonna live all she's 93 years old. She died. You want her to live to be 103? I didn't think the woman ever gonna die. I thought she was immortal. Like you, if you ever have seen a vampire movie.
Dylan, my mama, honey, no vampire immortal.
You don't know if you know my sister the way I knew my sister, they're immortal. You know that there are no way you say she's going to die. I would always worry, Mr. Henry, and feared that they're immortality.
Well, you feared immortality?
No, I didn't fear immortality. I said, I worry, is she ever going to die? You know, she's older than me living. She goes on living here another year. She goes on living here another year. And you start to say... my God, the woman's going to live on forever like one of the vampires, you know.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Henry, would you tell him to shut his hole? Because if he don't shut the trap, man, I got a trap door. Something, I'm going to put a latch on that trap door.
Look at Robert, let me just talk to her, okay?
Well, honey, I don't know what you were saying about my mother being immortal.
I didn't say she a vampire, you dumbass. I said I hope that I just don't want her to be immortal.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you want a woman to be immortal?
Are you... you try to be... Boy, I tell you, I can't get away from it.
Look, just talk to me, okay?
No, but I want to say this. Are you an old lady?
No.
All right. Until you try being an old lady, until you try being me, where I live in like an old lady and I got my ugly-ass nephew sleeping on a couch and watching Animal Planet and Puppy Bowl.
But you know I love a Puppy Bowl.
Puppy Bowl's pretty nice.
Is that Dickman?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lord. Oh, Lord. Dickman, you best just back off, okay? If you don't want to get your licks, you just back off of me, all right?
I'm sorry, Mr. Leonard, but I think Puppy Bowl's great.
Puppy Bowl's a big waste of space. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I don't know what...
You don't like the Puppy Bowl?
I like the Puppy Bowl? I think the Puppy Bowl is a waste of space. And I think that long, tall drink of water that plays the referee on a Puppy Bowl, do they tell me he's the man that invented a Puppy Bowl? They ought to strap him down and let all the puppies and all the puppies of all over the world just come up and do their business on him. That's how I feel about that Puppy Bowl.
Why don't you like the puppy? I mean...
I like a cuddly puppy as much as the next person. But I'm not going to waste my life like my nephew does, sitting on a couch. He eating up all the Quaker rice cake, drinking all my Henry Weinhardt. How much Henry Weinhardt I have in the house last night? How much Henry Weinhardt I have in the house last night? You answer a straight question.
I think you had a case...
And how much Henry Weinhardt I got now? I don't have one six-pack. What an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. You alcoholic, puppy bowl-watching, alcoholic jackball.
Well.
I guess that just about says it, doesn't it?
Yeah, that put me down.
You know something? I know you think you're being smart-ass. You get back here, I'll show you what smart-ass is.
All right, look, Mavis, we don't have a lot of time. I just wanted to say to you, number one, I understand what you said about your sister, Robert's mother. What was her name?
My sister's name was Eunice.
Eunice. And you didn't want her to be immortal.
No, I didn't want her to be immortal. That's so overrated. People talk about, I don't want to die. I want to die. Oh, God, how I want to die. Because if you are an old lady and you got this guy who laying around the house watching a puppy bowl... Well, I can go on and on.
Well, look, you're a sweet lady. I appreciate you being on our show. Thank you, and dear, get to bed, huh?
Because I'm an old... Now you just got on the fighting side of me.
Don't ever tell her to go to bed, man. She stays up all night sometimes.
I'm sorry. Just stay up as long as you want.
You on the fighting side of me. You tell me to go to bed. And just remember what I said, Robert. Puppy Bowl, the Puppy Bowl is for losers. You understand? All that Puppy Bowl showed me which dog is a loser. I don't want to lose a dog.
Phil Hendry.
When did you hear this? This is insane. I mean, the more I read about this Scream painting, now, I find this interesting. The Scream, this painting that we're talking about, and welcome back to the show, folks, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is our News and Information Hour with Bud and Robert. The Scream was stolen. One of the Screams, there's four of them, and I don't know, but one of them was stolen back in 1994, the same day as the opening of the 94 Winter Olympics in Lillehammer. Where's Lillehammer? Austria. All right. Now, four guys stole this painting. The painting had been moved down to a second-story display as part of the Olympic festivities, and the presence of international media covering the games made the theft a sensation. And early, I'm reading this, by the way, Bud, you'll be happy to know, from Winklepedia.
Yeah, Winklepedia is pretty good.
Maybe. Although this is fully annotated and footnoted, so everything's cool. An early claim of responsibility by a Norwegian pro-life group turned out to be bullcrap. After the gallery refused a ransom demand of $1 million, that's $1 million U.S. in March of 94, the gallery refused a ransom of $1 million in 1994. Norwegian, how do you refuse it unless you already, the cops have told you that they've got an idea or something, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, how do you refuse a ransom demand? It's not like it's a funny thing. It's not a human being. A human being, where they ask for a ransom, well, it's kind of funny. It's funny to think of a human being as someone that, well, it's logical to refuse paying a ransom for a human because you don't want to encourage terrorists. I don't, anyway.
What are you talking about? You pay a ransom for a human.
A human?
You know.
Anyway, the Norwegian police set up a sting operation with assistance from the British police and the Getty Museum, and the painting was recovered undamaged on May 7th, 1994. In January of 96, the four men were convicted in connection with the theft, including one man by the name of something or other. What is that? The artist formerly known as Prince? I can't understand that.
I think that's like Norwegian for Pluto.
How do you know that? It ain't Norwegian, man, okay? It's Norwegian.
What?
Norwegian. Not Norwegian.
Norwegian.
Norwegian. One of the guys that stole it in 1988 had been convicted of stealing another one of Edward Munch's paintings called The Vampire. Now, get a load of this. These guys were released on appeal on legal grounds. They were released on appeal on legal grounds. The British agents involved in the sting operation had entered Norway under false identities. So the guys that arrested them should not have arrested them, or at least the four guys that were involved in the sting, and they were British guys, had entered Norway illegally, so therefore they hadn't entered Norway, so therefore the sting operation couldn't have taken place, so therefore these guys get... What kind of...
Same thing happens in America.
Maybe. Boy, I tell you what. I can't wait for something like that to happen here in the States. And you're right, Bud. It's got to happen sooner or later. I'm sure it has happened. I just, if it has, it's just flown right under my radar, man, or over it or around it or however, things fly around radar. Another version of the Scream was stolen in 2004 on August the 22nd during daylight hours. Masked gunmen entered the Munch Museum in Oslo. And
where is that?
Oslo, Norway.
That's the capital of Norway.
And stole two paintings, Scream and Munch's Madonna. A bystander photographed the robbers as they escaped with the artwork to their car, shown at the right. Oh, wow, they're showing a picture of these jackasses running away. On April 8th, 2005, The Norwegian police arrested a suspect in connection with the theft, but the paintings remained missing, and it was rumored that they'd been burned by the thieves to destroy the evidence. On June 1st, 2005, with four suspects already in custody in connection with the crime, the city government of Oslo offered a reward of 2 million Norwegian kronies, roughly $313,500 American dollars, or 231,200 euros.
What?
For information that could help locate the paintings. Though the paintings remained at large, six men went on trial in early 2006, variously charged with either helping to plan or participate, blah, blah, blah. Three of the men were convicted and sentenced to between 4 and 8 years. The museum was closed for 10 months for a security overhaul. And they had recovered the Scream and the Madonna, but they didn't reveal detailed circumstances of the recovery. But the Norwegian police said they recovered that in 2006. So, you know, art is, it's very valuable, man.
I never heard of $120 million, man.
$120 million. And the reason why is it's very rare. There's two reasons why art is very, very valuable. Number one, there are people, and this is the thing that gives it its value, there are people that want it. And they are willing to pay large amounts of money for it. The reason why they want it is because art, especially this kind of art, when we talk about art, we're talking about paintings and drawings, the very earliest form of artistic expression that we that is recorded is art. The paintings on the walls, you know, in the caves.
What are you talking about?
You've never heard about the paintings in Spain?
No.
There are paintings on cave walls in Spain of herds of beasts running, of dogs, of reindeer, of bison.
What's a bison?
It's a freaking buffalo. Will you let me finish? Anyway, these are paintings that go back 14,000 years, 13,000, 11,000 years. And
the one you were telling me the guy got high when he painted them?
Well, they don't know if they got high. They think that they were painted by early shaman or early priests, members of whatever clan or tribe was living in the area at the time, and that the paintings on the walls were somehow sacred. It's a theory. It's a theory, man. Somehow they're sacred or somehow they're religious. And the dude that painted them was, while he was painting them, inhaling the smoke of some, you know...
Like weed.
Sure, bud. Whatever, you know.
Part of that BC Bud.
Yeah. BC Bud.
Oh, get out of here. That's right, man. He's smoking some of that British Columbia Bud. Anyway, so there you go. So people want this stuff, and they got a lot of money. And the cats that love art, man, they're loaded, baby. They are loaded. And
what do you think about that Madonna?
The what?
What's the one, Mona Lisa. How much you think that worth?
Mona Lisa? I don't know, man. I don't know. The Mona Lisa must be worth, if this thing's worth $120 million, the Scream, the Mona Lisa's got to be worth way more than this.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. The Mona Lisa must be worth like $200 million then, man. If this is $120 million, this thing. See, this is very iconic. Anytime, what we mean by iconic, we recognize it. We see it. It's familiar to us. We may not be art fans. We may never have heard of Edward Munch any more than we heard of his brother, Butt. Yeah, it's very funny, bud. We may not know pastels from oil. We may not even know what art is, but we recognize the figure. We see that. We go, aha, I know that. The Mona Lisa is the same. And there are very few paintings, but there are some that we look at and we go, oh, I know that. I've seen that. And the most humble person, that's what we mean by iconic, recognizes it. So, and the Mona Lisa, I mean... I don't know if there's a painting that's better known than that, so it's got to be worth more than this.
Man, if they ever sell that Mona Lisa, that'd be like millions and billions.
Dude, they already is millions, you idiot.
And, hey, come on, you jackasses arguing about it. They're going to sell it. It's in the Louvre, baby. It's in that museum in France. They'll never sell it. It's a national treasure. It's an international treasure. They're not going to sell it, okay?
But, I mean, if they did.
They ain't never going to sell it. It may get stolen. I mean, I think people stole that, too, in fact, at one time. They busted out. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
If you go to the Louvre in Paris, first of all, you can't get near the damn painting because there's 85 million people who are standing there posing and getting their picture taken with it. It's behind glass. because it's been, I think, defaced, or some people have attempted to... what
they do, like take a knife to it?
I don't know. I forget, but some people have tried to take it or to deface it. So it's behind glass. There's 85 billion people hanging around the damn thing.
You have to get there, like, early in the morning.
You could get there early in the morning, and I bet you anything, man. You could be the first guy in line when they open the damn place up, and I'll bet you, like, half the people make a beeline for the Mona Lisa, if not all of them. Come on, we're the first ones here, you know. So I don't think, I don't know, but so that painting, the Mona Lisa, is the most well-known in the world, so it's got to be one that is worth a lot of money. All right. Don't forget our website is philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. If you get over there, you can pick up a backstage pass, and you can watch live streaming video of our show as you are watching it right now. And you can see really cool things like the picture I'm showing on Phil TV right now of the auction scene at Sotheby's. But in any event, get a backstage pass. Listen to thousands of hours of marvelously archived audio, thousands of hours of the Phil Henry Show going back over a decade. It's all there with your backstage pass. The world famous Phil Henry Show will be back with
Truth
more. Our final
is
segment,
our bitch,
in just a moment.
The Phil Henry Woo. Show.
Woo, woo, woo. Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. If you look at our, if you look at Phil TV and HD, now what you're seeing there is a copy of the, this is a pastel. So he did four of them.
Well, what's this one?
Take it easy, bud. This is a pastel, a version executed in 1910 in tempera.
Ain't that something you get at a Chinese restaurant?
No, that's sushi.
What do you mean it's sushi? It's an art term.
What about tempera?
Tempura is tempura. I'm going to start. I've been threatening it. This is going to be the week. I'm going to kick someone's ass.
Well, all it said was like tempura.
It ain't. I didn't say tempura. I said tempura on cardboard. It was stolen from the Munch Museum in 2004. It was recovered in 2006. That's this painting. This is done on cardboard. Okay. Cardboard. And the thing is worth millions. There's another one that was a lithograph. He changed it into a lithograph. One of the things that I was reading that I think is kind of interesting is Andy Warhol did a series of prints of the Scream in the Warhol fashion, you know, where he does four or five, like he did Marilyn Monroe's face or the soup can. And his purpose was to, the word they use, desacralize or otherwise make it less of this iconic... totem or this object of reverence and make it something that was just very commonplace. That was what he wanted to do. Well, Edward Munch himself did it way, way before Andy Warhol ever got the idea, because when he made the lithograph, his idea was to reproduce it as much as he possibly could.
Sounded to me like that's the only painting this guy ever did.
Yeah, tried to make hay while the sun shined.
Well, what would you do, man?
I don't know. It seems like he commercialized it.
Commercialized it? They just made $120 million on it. What do you mean? Of course it's commercialized. What the hell? You think these guys like to starve? Sure he commercialized it. You know, the thing about people kill me. People just kill me. They just murder me. I mean, I love people. But when it comes to certain kinds of entertainments, the massive consumer would rather the artist starve to death just so long as it retains its unique quality, you know. Oh, I don't want you to get too commercial. Well, would you mind if I ate? Well, if it means that you sell out, So in other words, in our lives and in the way we conduct our lives, it seems to me that we go out there, all of us, and we go out and try to make the best living that we can. And if it means we do this or if it means we do that, of course we have our standards, but let's face it, we sell our talents to the highest bidder. But we don't seem to have the same open-mindedness when it comes to the entertainments that we enjoy. So here comes some poor slob, wants to do the same thing, and he's an artist, and he wants to sell his art, and now we're saying he's a sellout, and I hate him, and I used to like his music, but I don't anymore.
Well, I got to tell you, it's kind of that way about Avenged Sevenfold. They started being on Madden. I hate them now.
You hate Avenged Sevenfold because they're on Madden?
Yeah, he used to love them.
Why do you hate them?
Because they sold out.
But I'm saying, don't you want them to make a living?
They're making a living. They play a lot of clubs.
Oh, they play a lot of clubs. I'll bet you they just pull down really serious money that way. These guys, they put their music on Madden, dude, and they put it out anywhere they can so they can advertise what they do so they can make a living. Okay? But you don't want them to, because you want them to remain Avenged Sevenfold, the band that you love to hear in clubs.
Yeah, so what?
So they want to make a living. That's the whole point that I'm trying to make here.
Your voice squeaked when you did that.
Yeah, it did. You want to make a living?
Oh, well, I'm so sorry, guys. I didn't mean for my voice to squeak.
It sounded like this, but they got to make a living.
Okay, you guys, do you make your point?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You guys going to have yourselves a couple of laughs here?
No, I just... Go ahead, Mr. Henry. Continue with the show.
Chinese dissident is released from embassy.
Really?
Causing turmoil for the U.S.
Do tell.
I'm going to... Hey! Your ass.
Yeah, I knew you were laughing.
All right, so I'm laughing. All right, here's the story that is just as disgusting as can possibly be. It doesn't get any more disgusting. In fact, I don't even want to read it. Oh, well, yes, I will. Former U.S. presidential candidate John Edwards' wife, Elizabeth, ripped off her shirt and bra in a confrontation with her husband over his affair. The court that is hearing this case against him heard today. And by today, I mean yesterday. We're now into Thursday. Breast cancer sufferer Elizabeth Edwards also collapsed during the fight in an airport car park. Good God. Mrs. Edwards' daughter left the court in tears during the latest evidence in her father's campaign finance trial. He denies using donations to hide a pregnant mistress and could face up to 30 years in jail if convicted. He could also be hit with a $1.5 million fine. Mr. Edwards has pled not guilty to 6 counts of campaign finance law violation. His 30-year-old daughter, Kate, who's been seated in the front row for much of the trial, was crying as she left the court in Greensboro, North Carolina, on Wednesday. Christina Reynolds, a former Edwards communication advisor and friend of his wife, told of the couple's confrontation a day after a supermarket tabloid published an article about his affair. The National Enquirer had revealed purported details of Mr. Edwards' relationship with Riel Hunter, who became pregnant with his child. Ms. Reynolds said the confrontation happened at Raleigh-Durham International Airport in North Carolina in October of 2007. The court heard that Mrs. Edwards stormed off and collapsed outside a private aircraft hangar. Ms. Reynolds said that she, along with another woman, helped Mrs. Edwards get to a bathroom and calmed her down, but Mrs. Edwards went outside again to find her husband. Ms. Reynolds said Mrs. Edwards had screamed, "You don't see me anymore." Then she took off her shirt and bra, exposing herself to her husband in front of his staffers, according to the court. He didn't have much of a reaction, Ms. Reynolds said. Mrs. Edwards had gone through intense treatment for breast cancer before the incident took place. She died in 2010 after a long struggle with the disease.
Did she have a mastectomy?
I don't know. At this point, I don't know. When she took off her bra, I guess she had a bra on. I guess not. Ms. Reynolds testified that as people rushed to cover Mrs. Edwards and get her into a car, she heard Mr. Edwards call his wife's doctor for help. After that, he got on a waiting plane and made a scheduled appearance in South Carolina. Ms. Reynolds said the tabloid article was apparently not the first Mrs. Edwards knew of the affair. In the summer of 2007, Mrs. Edwards told Mrs. Reynolds that her husband had confessed to the relationship. Well, that's pretty dramatic, man. Your wife's suffering from breast cancer. Whether or not she'd had a mastectomy, I don't know. But she was wearing a bra, and she took that off. She said, "You don't see me anymore. Here I am." You know?
Why'd she take the blouse off?
She had breast cancer.
So she was making a dramatic statement to him. She was saying, she said to him, "You don't see me anymore. Well, here I am. Here I am, your wife, and this is what I've been going through. And you're off with your girlfriend." Dude. Oh, man. You know, do yourself a favor, man. If you want to fool around with the help, just get a divorce. Just get the hell away from your wife, you know, or somehow work it out, you know, that you're, you know, that you get to see other people. I don't know if that's possible, but, man, that is really heavy. And then the guy had to go off and do a campaign. I mean, you figure by that point, this jackass, he couldn't possibly have thought he was going to be elected president of the United States. What was he going to do if he got elected president?
I don't know, man.
What if he was able to keep it quiet?
Well, John Kennedy did.
Well,
that's true.
No, that's a good point. Kennedy did, and a whole lot of other guys did, but John Edwards wasn't smart enough. And this guy, this bunny, I say guy, bunny Andrew Carnegie Mellon, Bunny Mellon?
Yeah.
She said that John Edwards reminded her of Kennedy. What part?
Well, you don't ask that question.
Yeah, what part? I bet you I know what the part is.
Oh, shut up. World famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. And, of course, philhenryshow.com is where you go to get our daily podcasts as well as our daily videocasts. philhenryshow.com. And check out our souvenir shop. And until tonight at 10 o'clock, let that be a lesson for you.
Phil Hendry.